Okay, let's come to order. Roll call. I'm Daniel Weaver, the chair of the Railroad Advisory Board.
John Schaefer, vice chair.
Gentlemen, please use your microphones when you're speaking.
Gerald Jacobus, Advisory Board.
Jim Pearson, Railroad Advisor.
Mark Daniels, Railroad Advisory Board.
Dave Rowe, Advisory Board.
Neil Chambers, Advisory Board.
Terry Gardner, Advisory Board.
Danielle Cowley, Public Works.
Kevin Tyler, Clark County Public Works.
Keep that here.
Michael O'Connell, former property owner along the Holman area.
Marvin Matheson, property owner, Holman.
Randy Williams, BYCX.
Jim Malinowski, Railroad Advisory
McKeel,
Board.
Linda McKeel, citizen, member of the Friends of Central Vancouver, and 18th LD Democrat. Thank you.
Harrison Husting from Community Planning.
Jenna Kay, Clark County Community Planning.
Okay, on board.
Yeah, and online, Jim already announced or already introduced himself. We also have Jackie Lane, Kim O'Hara, Nancy Halverson, Ann Donnelly, and Mark Herseg.
Hey, welcome everybody. Has everybody read the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
Been moved and seconded. We approve the minutes. Any discussion, questions, comments, otherwise? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. I have no particular comments right now, so we'll go on with our various comments. PVJR? No, I'm sorry. BYCX.
Thanks, Dan.
You have different initials.
Yeah. Nate didn't check in with me to give me a report to turn in. I did talk to him last week. He was out of the country for spring break. So we've had a quiet winter up until the last couple of weeks. I don't know if anybody follows us on Facebook or on the Yakko page. But we've had a bunch of vandalism lately. We had our gang car and our tie crane parked, as we call it, in the back 40, big empty lot out in the back of our area. We moved them out there so Railworks could stage their grapple trucks and equipment dumpsters up by the tracks, and then they'd had access for their high rail equipment. Anyway, the gang car got the windows kicked out of it.
Yeah.
The oil cap, radiator cap, and oil breather cap were off, but we found those. We're still missing a dipstick. If anybody's got a dipstick for a 300 cubic inch Ford, an old one, I could sure use one. tagged significantly. Radiator hose got cut, so all the coolant's out of it. So because it's in such a sorry state with all the windows were Lexan, so they didn't break them. They just threw them out in the middle of a field and all the rubber's kicked out. While it's all torn up, we're going to go ahead and give it a 50, as I call it, a 50 foot paint job. Get out there when we have time and sand it down. And Jerry is an experienced body shop guy. Jerry's going to mop it on with 50 foot paint. And we're going to paint it the same color as our cabooses. The tie crane had a little different fate. It had glass windows. They're all laying on the ground broken. And that's a lot of glass. We had it partly taken apart to put new injectors in. It's got a Detroit diesel. We found a lot of the parts laying out in the field. We picked them all up. So we've got to deal with that. Our tie exchanger sitting in town. Somebody took the caps off the fuel tank and off the hydraulic tank. Of course, it rained and filled, got water in those, so we have to purge those out and clean it. They took the air cleaner off completely, and that's gone. It's a little, I think it's a Honda engine, two-cylinder Honda. And then two of the caboose, one of the cabooses had two windows, one completely shattered, and another one with BB holes in it. So this has been all in the last couple weeks.
These were in separate locations?
They're all within a quarter of a mile of each other.
Or
less.
Close, but not.
Yeah, and all I can think of is, well, I mean, we had one of the neighbors said they heard kids on top of the cars, walking on top of the cars at midnight. And one of the neighbors said he picked them up on camera at 10 minutes after 9 to 9:10 one evening. So we have, some of the neighbors have cameras, unfortunately too far away. We're trying to implement some cameras out there. Fortunately, Yackel doesn't have police service at night, definitely not after midnight, because I think there's only one or two deputies for all of North County. So it's pretty poor coverage out there. But we're going to do the best we can. The caboose with the broken window, if we can't get it repaired, we have extra glass. We'll take that one and bad order it and set it on a siding. And same with the gang car. We can't move the tie crane because the engine doesn't run. We can tow it, I guess. They've got the air brakes are caged, and I think the drive chain's disconnected, so we can move that. But I don't know that moving them in the town any closer in the town would help us any. On the positive side, our volunteers have been working on getting our cars all looking pretty. I was out there the other last week, and they were painting the inside of one of the cabooses. They were painting, had taken the seats out and were painting them at a different location. So we're getting ready for it. The volunteers that work on the cars are doing a great job. The deputy that's assigned to the area, Charlie Harris, I communicate with him directly on Messenger and pass on the information. We believe we have some prospects of where the damage came from. And he'll be back to work tomorrow. He's off. He takes Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. Or Saturday, Sunday, Monday. He works Monday through Thursday. So he'll be back, and he's been following pretty close. He stays in touch with a lot of the volunteers on social media. But that's a few thousand dollars we've got to deal with. And luckily, we're volunteers, so it's basically the materials are what we have to buy. Other than that, we'll be starting Mother's Day weekend. We'll be running trains at our normal time, noon and 2:30 on Saturdays and Sundays. They're working on the steam engine. I don't know if it's going to be up for Father's Day. That's my hope, but those guys are pretty tight-lipped on what they're doing up there. Let's see, anything else? I think that's all we could think about. You have anything, Terry?
Yeah,
of April. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the town will have their, they, we kind of cooperate on that. Are you going to use the back 40? Okay. Okay. The other thing I've got that made me think about it. The county's contract to do some rail rehabilitation after all the bridge work. I guess it was surplus money that was awarded to Lee Contractors, and I've been in contact with them. I'm waiting for a kickoff meeting so we can get started giving them space. They're going to, I told them they could use our yard as long as it doesn't interfere with our activities. Anybody have any questions?
Jim Malinowski has his hand raised.
Yeah, does the Yackel Town Council going to get involved with this? I would think they would be concerned that if this kind of vandalism becomes popular, the whole town is going to have problems.
I can't speak to that, but Terry Gardner is on the board. He works for the town.
We've been looking at different options, and we got a bunch of new cameras in. We're waiting for a couple more parts, and we're going to be putting cameras up at the Central Park, which is right there by the station. there's going to be five cameras there and also facing towards the north where the intersection is right there, that three-way intersection. So, yes, the town is trying to figure this out too. Ball field got hit also. So it's not just one place. It's been all over. So, yeah, we're trying to figure it all out and get pictures and cameras and see what we can do.
So it's pervasive throughout the whole town. It's not just the railroad. I thought maybe it was the railroad being targeted since it was in two separate locations, but
no,
close by.
They hit the ball field inside the batting things. They wrote graffiti and all kinds of stuff. Same red paint, same everything. So whoever it is, it's the same people going from here to there.
Is it considered local, or do they think somebody from out of town don't know it?
I don't know. We're just hoping to get the cameras up and get something.
We see a lot of foot traffic along the tracks in town. It's real convenient. And out where the equipment was damaged, I was out there yesterday, and I could see bicycle tracks, foot tracks, dog tracks along the side of the Y siding, which goes from town out to the baseball field. So it's a regular thoroughfare.
Okay. Anything else? Any questions of Randy? Okay. County activities.
Yeah. As Randy mentioned, county's working on executing the contract with Lee Contractors. It should be executed by both parties shortly, and then we can get a pre-construction meeting scheduled, get that work going. Work has to be completed by June 30 because that's when the grant expires. So that's going to be the focus next couple months. And other than that, not a lot to report on the railroad front, at least currently.
Any activity with the railroad presentation open house situation? I have a one comment to make. I belong to a rural electric group that for another home that I own. And I reading an article in there, and they were talking about the hydroelectric power and the all the talk about tearing down dams and tearing up locks and freeing up the river for fish and everything. But they got into the discussion of moving goods up and down the river through the locks because it's expensive to maintain the locks and the dams and everything. And they were making an argument for there's significantly greater amount of movement of goods up and down the river on barges than there is on railroads. But then it compared the railroads to the trucking, and it verifies that four times as much you can move by rail as you can by trucks. And I would meant to copy that article because it has as a reference to the source of that information. It's coming from a source. It may be different than the source we've been using, but it's certainly supportive of that effort of using railroad versus trucks to haul goods along the line. I'll bring that in and do it. Do you have any activity on that? Is there anybody want to report on that?
So we've met twice. And once today and once about 2 weeks ago to discuss what get an outline basically of how the presentation would go. We're still working on it, but it'll be some time, I guess, but we're just trying to figure out what format and then figure out the how to best put this together. But we've got some good ideas, I think.
Okay.
On that note, speaking with county leadership recently, there was a request that this information be presented to council before going out into the community in like a work session format, so council could give you feedback on the material that you're presenting. So
absolutely.
I think when you're ready, when you feel like you're ready, then we can work on scheduling that.
Yeah, this is Dave Rowe. We haven't established a time when we want to do this or a place, but we're thinking maybe Battleground Community Center might be a good place for a presentation, but we're open to ideas where we can make this presentation. But I think we want to have history, bring the history in involved in it, and we'll put together, we need some help from other people just to get some ideas what we can present.
Let me know when your next session is, and I'll try to pop in and give you some ideas. Okay, Kevin, you want to talk about the...
So this was just to let folks know that there's a public hearing with the County Planning Commission this coming Thursday, 6:30 p.m., in regards to the Chalachi Bluff repeal. I know that that's been a subject of interest for the Railroad Advisory Board, and so wanted you all to be aware. You should be able to find information about that online and how to participate in that hearing. It'll be virtually through WebEx, or you can attend in person here, probably in this room. Does that sound right? Yeah. In the hearing room.
It'll be a hearing that's in this room, you said?
The hearing will be in the next room over.
Okay.
So if you have any questions about that, there's the flyer that was in the minutes today. So I just wanted to make sure you were all aware.
Do you want to talk a bit about that, John, just to tell us what's involved with that?
Well, as you might recall, a long, long time ago, Granite Construction requested that a piece of property in Chalachi be included in the surface mining overlay. And typically, when somebody does that, they just say, I have rock on my property, I'd like to have it in the overlay, and that's about all they give them. But in this case, they gave them lots of information, how many tons a year they thought they're going to have, how they're going to ship it, how many truck, it was pretty involved. So typically the county would basically just say, yeah, there's rock, and put them in the overlay. And that was appealed because the Growth Management Act says that you have to study impacts when they become known. And so there's a lot of impacts that were in that application. And so they could not do a determination on significance. They had to do an EIS on that. The county's response was that, well, at the phase where they're going for inclusion in the surface mining overlay, they're not committed to anything. They could come in and say, we're going to do a 2,000 or 2 million tons a year today, and come in tomorrow and say, hey, we changed that to 500 tons. So that was not the correct time to do the study, because the better time is when they come in for a conditional use permit, where whatever they say they're going to do, they have to do, and it's required in their permit. The Growth Management Board ruled against them and determined that the county was out of compliance with the Growth Management Act, which triggers a whole lot of things. You're not allowed to get grants and from the state unless you're in full compliance. So way back in December, they had a hearing on it, and the thought at that time was they had spent all this money with lawyers. They've done everything. Only thing left was the oral arguments with the Court of Appeals. And where they left it then is like, if we win, we win. If we don't, then we're going to have to do something else. It was a unanimous decision against the county. So now the county has to come back. And I think they passed an ordinance to put this in the surface mining overlay. And I think the meeting is about rescinding that ordinance. Is that it?
I think it's about repealing. And so it has to go through the planning commission to recommend to council to make that decision.
Anyhow, it's pretty much a dead deal right now because, what I'm sure the operator is worried about is that I got to do an EIS to study these things that I disclose, which was stupid on their part. But and then when they get in the conditional use permit, there's going to be a whole bunch of other things that are going to pop up, and they'll probably have to do a second environmental impact statement on those things that weren't covered under the initial environmental impact statement. So anything down the road is questionable, and whatever it is, it's going to be a long time coming. Welcome to government.
And one of the questions I raised with John is whether they can just totally retract it and file a new application. And we don't know what that answer is, whether they can go back and go do a more generic application and go forward. We just don't know what that amounts to. But it seems kind of silly that we can't get an overlay just put on there without going to all that.
Yeah, and
EIS.
You know, Councillor Young had, he's the one that stated that if we do this and we require an EIS up front, then instead of an applicant giving us a lot of information up front, they're going to give us nothing. Because if they give us anything, we're going to have to require an EIS. So, it'll probably be the property owner come in and go, hey, I got rock on my property. Well, how much are you going to mine? Don't know. Don't have anybody to mine it yet. How many trucks are you going to run here? Having a clue. And all these things they want to do, they want to study, he'll just give them no answer, which will be good for him because he'll probably get into the overlay, but it's bad for the county in that they got to wait till they get an application for a conditional use permit before they really find out what the impacts are going to be for that piece of property.
Anyway, I assume that the Planning Commission is going to come up with a recommendation at this meeting, but they're asking for testimony and anything to go along with that. So if any of you have any pertinent testimony you want to give, that's the time to give it.
It will probably be crowded.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we have a presentation by Climate Change.
Yeah, so the Railroad Advisory Board had requested information from the county on work towards climate policy. And so we have here tonight Jenna Kay and Harrison Husting from Community Planning to go through a presentation for you, and I'll share that and they will take over.
Oh, that's okay. Good afternoon. For those of you who I haven't met before, my name is Jenna Kay. And as Kevin was saying, I work in community planning. I'm a land use planner there. And this is Harrison Husting. He's a transportation planner in community planning. And we have been working on a climate project that we're here to give you an update on. To implement new climate change planning legislation that was passed by the legislature recently. You can go to the next slide. Okay, so we're going to start off, we're just going to give you some background on what this is and what the state says we have to do and what we've been doing. And then we'll talk about what we've learned so far and what's coming up next for this project. And should be plenty of time for any questions that you have. Next slide. Okay, so let's start with the background. Here to the next slide. So, okay, House Bill 1181. This was signed into law in 2023, and it's a really big bill. It's about 50 pages long. So I'm going to highlight some of the key things that this legislation did. First, it added a new climate change and resiliency goal to the state's Growth Management Act. And so the Growth Management Act is the state's primary land use planning law, which directs parts of the state that have the fastest growing populations to plan for that population growth. So in addition to creating this new goal, Clark County now has to add a climate element or climate chapter into our comprehensive plan. And so the comprehensive plan, this is one of our key tools we use to implement the Growth Management Act. So counties and cities, we have these plans to plan for the population growth, how to plan for enough development, things like that. So this climate element or chapter, it has to do two things. We have to plan for improving the county's resilience, and we have to plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the county. There's some other themes in the legislation, including environmental justice. So we need to make sure whatever's being proposed by the county is benefiting those most vulnerable to impacts from climate change. And we need to base our work on best available science. And we need to follow the Department of Commerce's guidance that they have developed for local jurisdictions to follow. And we have to do all of this by the end of December of 2025. This is a mandatory due date. And Clark County is in the first wave of implementers. So law passed in 2023. No city or county has finished implementing this yet. We're in the first wave. So there's plenty of places in the state who've done some climate planning, but they did not do it under the framework of this law. So this is a new law, and we are at the forefront of counties and cities scrambling to get this done on time.
Question?
Yeah.
Is on the greenhouse gas reduction, is there a state goal, or you just get to make up your own goal?
There is a state goal to get to net zero emissions by 2050. 2050. And so cities and counties, we are expected to align with that. So we are supposed to try to get there as well for our own local emissions. Okay, let's go to, all right. So I'm going to dig in a little bit deeper. So a little bit more on what we have to do for the resilience part. So a comprehensive plan, it's a 20-year plan. So we need to come up with policies, goals, actions, things the county is going to do over the next 20 years to identify, protect, and enhance natural areas, identify, protect, and enhance community resiliency. We need to make sure our plan addresses natural hazards that are supposed to get worse here in the county due to climate change. And we have to prioritize actions that are benefiting overburdened communities or people who are more vulnerable in our county. Next slide. And then on the greenhouse gas reduction side, similarly, we need to come up with the things the county is going to do over the next 20 years to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled per person. And we have to do this without increasing greenhouse gas emissions elsewhere in the state. So we can't push our emissions to our neighbor. And these actions also need to prioritize reductions that benefit overburdened communities to maximize the co-benefits of reduced air pollution and environmental justice. Okay, so those are the core requirements in this law. If you go to the next slide, just to, as a reminder, so for planning in the county, we only plan for the unincorporated areas. So that's showing up as blue on the map. So that's including the rural parts of the county as well as the unincorporated urban areas, so the urban areas outside of the cities. I will mention, though, that all of our city colleagues in the other cities in the county They have the same due date and are also working on climate planning as well. There's some different requirements depending on the size of the city, but every city, even Yakult, Le Centre, has to do some climate planning on the same timeline. Next slide. Okay, so here's our project timeline. We have five phases and we are at the start, but I'll start at the beginning. So we started off by spending some time researching and exploring climate impacts that are expected here in Clark County, which led us to developing an initial draft list of resilience policies. We then looked at the results of a greenhouse gas inventory, which led us to development of an initial draft list of greenhouse gas reduction policies. And then most recently, we just wrapped up spending a few months reviewing and refining those policy lists. So we just finished working with our advisory groups and are getting ready to go into the adoption process where proposed climate policies will go to the Planning Commission and ultimately to the County Council. Okay, next slide. So just a little bit more on advisory groups that I just mentioned. So we've done quite a bit of engagement related to this project. We've had three advisory groups. Dave Rowe in your Railroad Advisory Board was part of our community advisory group. This was 20 members from across the community from, you know, this group had freight and development and building interests to people representing environmental interests to other community interests, a really diverse group of people in that group. We tasked them with using a consensus-based approach to come up with some recommended policies that are consistent with this law. So they just wrapped that work up last week. We also had an Environmental Justice Coalition. These were community-based organizations who work with particularly vulnerable people in the county who have helped us with our community engagement. So when we went out to collect feedback, they were going out into their communities to make sure we were hearing from people particularly vulnerable to changes in climate. And they also helped us develop an equity lens to review draft policies to think through them. And I'll talk more about that in a little bit. And then finally, we had a partner agency team. So this is county staff and our city colleagues and regional agencies who helped us review policies as well. So lots of people have had a lot of input on these so far. Okay, so I'm going to now pass it to Harrison, who's going to talk a little bit about some of our key data and what we've learned.
Hopefully that's better. So on the screen is the definition in the state law that kind of defines the definition of climate resilience. And climate resilience means the ongoing process of anticipating, preparing for, and adapting to changes in climate and minimizing negative impacts to our natural systems, infrastructure, and communities. Next slide. So kind of within that definition, you might be asking kind of what does that kind of changes in climate mean, and maybe what specific changes we're referring to. So next slide. When we look at climate projections for unincorporated Clark County, kind of under the business as usual emission scenario, we see that the county is projected to have more hot days. It's more likely to have summer drought. We see more high fire danger days, more days with smoky air, more extreme precipitation events, and we see more frequent and severe flooding along certain streams and rivers. And we also, it's more likely to have landslides in certain places as well. So when we say a change in climate, it's really, these are the changes that we're talking about, and it's changes in the frequency and patterns of specific natural hazard events. Next slide. So our task with this project was to really improve Clark County's resilience to these hazards, which kind of doesn't just require, it doesn't require us to plan to change these hazards, but really to plan for the impacts related to these hazards. So for instance, planning on how our community can better be prepared for more hot days during the summer and having better options for being able to cool down and stay safe when the weather is hot. So we have a document that provides a high-level summary of examples of climate impacts across various sectors linked in this presentation, and we'll make sure that you have the presentation to send out to the group at the end of today. But for instance, we just kind of pulled out the transportation sector and some of those impacts to transportation, and I'll just read out some of those. Sorry, I'm not in the great best position for this. But we kind of see within the transportation sector with some of those kind of changes that I showed on the screen previously, we see that there would be more damages to roads and bridges. We would see transportation delays, unsafe driving conditions, and reduced ability to travel. We would see damage to local routes, including things like bike lanes, trails, and sidewalks. We would see some interruptions to aviation, railways, and ports or marine routes. And we would see kind of just increased maintenance costs for transportation infrastructure over time as well. And then kind of to the right of all those different impacts, you kind of see what changes would directly kind of contribute to those impacts. Next slide, please. So we're gonna quickly just change gears and talk about greenhouse gas reduction. When we mean greenhouse gas reduction, we kind of really mean actions taken to reduce or eliminate the emissions of greenhouse gases present and future in order to reduce the rate and extent of climate damage. And that is taken directly from the Department of Commerce climate element guidance. Next slide. So as part of this project, the county conducted a greenhouse gas emissions inventory, which is an accounting kind of exercise to track emission sources. This is going to serve as the baseline to measure against in the future. And this slide kind of shows the results of looking at the data from 2022. And so these are all emissions for locally produced emissions, which means emissions that are produced by activities within the boundaries of the unincorporated county, and emissions tied to kind of our electricity sources that might be located outside of the county boundaries as well. And so just to kind of provide a quick kind of review of this, I think transportation did end up as the highest emission sector, but these are kind of them breaking out, but it's kind of roughly even with transportation and building and energy at 36%, ag, forest, and land use at 21%, kind of industrial, kind of manufacturing at 5%, or just kind of industrial process and product use at 5%, and then solid waste and wastewater at 2%. You can see kind of on the top right, that kind of, I think, calculated out to about 6.1 metric tons of CO2 equivalent per capita. And you might, I don't know if you're interested in the county's emissions compared to other places, but this is a little bit lower than the state average, but higher on the global average. So next slide. And so this is just the inventory again, but in a bar chart form. So the local emissions are here on the left, with imported emissions here on the right. These kind of emissions on the right are produced somewhere else in the world, but tied to goods and services that we consume here. So for example, if you were to go to the grocery store and buy produce from California, the emissions tied to the food produced there kind of would be captured on this list over here on the right. So somewhere that's produced but consumed here in Clark County.
So what does that mean? I mean, how does that create emissions different than eating an apple from California versus eating an apple from Washington?
Yeah, go ahead.
It matters. Kevin, can you go to the next slide? So this legislation is focused on the local emissions because we have a lot more control over things within the county, whereas we don't have any control over how California grows its food or its emissions, right? So the point here is, well, I guess there's a few points. One, for here in Clark County, more emissions are being produced by the things we buy than here in the county. So I think we just want to acknowledge that the emissions here are a lot less than the emissions tied to things we buy from whether it's California, China, wherever, right? But this law is directing us to focus on these local emissions because that's what's happening here and that's what things like planning can help influence. So our focus is on those left-hand side things.
So you just build a fence around Washington and you got more than half the problem solved.
Well,
fence has to go to the outer space.
Anyway, yeah, lots to talk about there. But our main point being our planning effort is focused on the left side items.
Okay. So if you want to go to the next slide. So kind of going a little bit deeper into some of the results that I showed in the last that we showed in the last couple slides, we kind of just provided a detailed breakdown of the transportation emissions. And one of the reasons why we wanted to show that last slide was we did include purchased air travel, which is just included in here as reference, but it's not something that we have kind of direct. It's not going to be something that we're able to kind of incorporate into this project, but it does take up a huge chunk of kind of the emissions from the transportation sector. And it does kind of show a breakdown of both emissions from urban and rural. And as you can see, the largest source of emissions is from gasoline, and then off-road diesel and diesel from freight also make up a significant portion. There's a kind of very small portion of transportation emissions related to rail in the county and the power used for EVs as well. So you can see for rail, it's just that sliver of 1%. And then now that we've kind of taken a look at some data kind of on the resilience side and greenhouse gas, I'm going to pass it over to Jenna.
That chart points out why we should have more rail that some of us members really are trying to support in this county because it really reduces emissions. And also it will reduce pollutants in our water.
Thank you for that comment. So we're going to keep going, but yeah, glad to talk more about specifically your all's rail interests too once we get to the end of the presentation. So yeah. Let's go to the next slide. So the kind of third piece of information we needed to consider as part of this project were the new requirements tied to environmental justice. And so again, the state gave us definitions for what this means. So they are defining vulnerable populations as population groups more likely to be at higher risk for poor health outcomes in response to environmental harms. And they are defining overburdened communities as geographic areas where vulnerable populations face combined multiple environmental harms and health impacts. So this was another set of definitions and information we needed to keep top of mind as we went through, worked through the project. So if we go to the next slide, I'll just show an example of this. So one way we did that is where we had data available related to vulnerable groups and environmental data, we looked at it and considered it. So here's an example where on the left side, that map that has purple on it, that comes from the State Department of Health. It's called the Environmental Health Disparities Map. It looks at a combination of like socioeconomic factors and environmental health factors. So a darker purple color means more burdened census tracts. A lighter color means less burdened census tracts. So you can see the more burdened communities in the county based on this mapping exercise are kind of, outside the city of Vancouver in our more urban areas generally. And then we have a map on the right here. This is a map of fine particulate matter, so a one way you can measure air quality. And in this case, a darker green means worse air quality. A lighter green means better air quality. And one thing that stands out to me when I look at these maps is the darker greens and the darker purples are in pretty similar places generally. So generally in the county where air quality is worse is also where we have more burdened community members. So we know if we are doing a good job addressing air quality where it's worse, we'll also be helping community members who are more vulnerable to more things in our community. So that's something, particularly with transportation policies, we needed to keep in mind because we know that a lot of forms of transportation are making air quality worse too, right? So that we need to think about, okay, how are we going to implement these policies in a way that's not only improving air quality everywhere in the county, but how do we do that in a way that's helping address it where it's worse? So something, again, that was sort of in the back of our minds as we did this work.
What's the significance of the dotted lines on this?
So on that left, that's the urban growth area boundary. So we grade out the cities because we can't plan for them as the county. And then the dashed line is the urban growth area. Okay, next slide. Okay, so we can go, I'm gonna shift gears to sort of what's coming up. So that was sort of some key data and things we had to think about through this work. So now what? So I'm just showing the timeline again. So we've just finished working with our advisor groups to get a draft set of policies, and we're getting ready for the adoption process. I guess eventually this will make its way to the Planning Commission, and the County Council will be starting to have work sessions with them over the next few weeks. And this project is part of the broader comprehensive plan update that's going on at the county right now. So it's going to be a very drawn out adoption process. So we're gonna be briefing Planning Commission and Council over the next few months, but they are not voting until this fall when the whole rest of the comprehensive plan is getting voted on. So there's like 9 or so months to go until this is actually going to be voted on by Council. Planning Commission and Council will hold hearings, so anyone who wants to submit any testimony, whether in writing or verbally, there will be an opportunity to do that before they vote, but it won't be until the end of the year where that's happening. Okay, next slide. Okay, so you may be wondering, so what's in these draft policies that you've been working on? So we have a policy list that it has 32 goals in it, and a little over 100 policies that are nested under those goals. We pulled out the 4 transportation goals to put on this slide, which I'll talk about in a moment. And then each goal has a set of policies underneath it. So we have one goal that is around reducing vehicle trips and miles throughout the county. And then there's a whole set of policies underneath that on ways to do that. We have a goal on reducing emissions from the county-owned vehicles to zero emissions. A goal on promoting equitable adoption of electric vehicles and electric vehicles of all kinds, whether it's someone's individual car or freight or rail. And then we have a 4th goal on ensuring resilience throughout the transportation system. Just to give you a little bit more detail on some examples of policies that you might find under these goals. We have a policy under goal 19 that relates to expanding transportation options in the rural area and exploring options for electric rail. So that is under goal 19. Under goal 21, we have a policy that talks about coordinating regional, doing regional planning for electric vehicle infrastructure, which includes and calls out freight, including both trucks and rail there as well. And then the other thing I wanted to mention around sort of these goals and policies are, you know, this is a new batch of goals and policies for the county's comprehensive plan, but there's a whole lot of other policies and goals already in the comprehensive plan that are still there. So for instance, I know you all are focused on the rail line. There are a lot of strategies in the current comprehensive plan that tie to the rail line. And those are still there and not going, you know, they're not going anywhere with the addition of these. So I just wanted to emphasize that and glad to talk about that more if that's helpful. So I think I'm going to stop there. And I think our last slide has our project webpage and things like that on it. But we, Harrison and I, are glad to answer questions.
I have one. On your goals on greenhouse gas reduction, it just mentions vehicle trip reductions. And now that lots of people are driving electrical vehicles, doesn't that kind of muddy the water a little bit?
It's an interesting question. So the law says we need to both reduce emissions, which you could just say, okay, everything's just going to be electric. Like that's how we'll do it. But it also says we have to reduce vehicle miles traveled per person. So on average, so we have to do both. So you can't just switch to electric and meet the requirements of the law. I will also add the way the state, I'm going to look at Harrison to make sure I get this right. The way the state defines vehicle miles traveled, does not include freight, right? So this is, it does not include freight. So that is only looking at light duty and like passenger vehicles for that calculation. I think there's an assumption that businesses are trying to, no one's going to drive extra if they don't have to, or travel more than they, you know, have to, sort of in a more business oriented environment. So.
You're promoting electric vehicles. Has there been a very comprehensive study how much pollutant more they're putting in the water of the microplastics and everything that are very toxic to humans and the fish in the water? Because the cars are much heavier, the tires wear out multiple times faster, all that stuff's going in the water. I'm a fisherman, first of all, and people don't realize how much toxins are going in the water. So I have a concern about that. Promoting electric all the time without studying the comprehensive plan on that.
Yeah, no, thanks for your comment. I do think one thing with these comprehensive plan policies, they're very high level in general. So the details have, they're sort of guiding policies, right, with the details to come. I will say around electric vehicles, I think our goals and policies they're fairly light in that we don't have control over the vehicle market here in the county. So, but we do need to be prepared and planning, you know, for them and whoever wants them, that we are supporting the infrastructure around that. But I do think we did hear a lot of mix of opinions on electric vehicles and pros and cons associated with them. Yeah.
Question. When you make reference to rail influence, are you talking about our rail or the north-south main rail from Seattle to Eugene?
I think for these climate policies, we haven't necessarily specified. We're talking rail generally. So it would include any rail going through the unincorporated county. So it would include both the short line and the other lines as well. So a lot of details to figure out in the future if these get approved.
Jim, you want to ask your question?
Yes. The concern I have is that you're giving very short shift in the report to the benefits of rail. You're not really looking at the impacts of electric vehicles versus rail on the environment. When you consider the impact of mining required to produce batteries, the disposal cost of batteries, the amount of space required for highways versus rail corridors. It just seems to me that ignoring the benefits of rail in this is ignoring a lot of the real adverse impacts of electric vehicles and versus rail. If we could get more people, move more people and more goods on rail, that would do more environment to provide environmental benefits than anything we could do. And yet there you barely give lip service to that within this report. So I'm very disappointed that that an effort like this ignores the best way we have to reduce impacts of transportation, and we would be far better off getting people out of their cars and freight out of trucks and into a rail system that's far more efficient than highway transport. And yet this report hardly touches on that issue.
Thank you, Jim, for your comment. And I think the one thing I'll just reiterate is that the rail-related policies in the existing comprehensive plan are still there around promoting the rail and use of rail lines. So I would encourage you to take a look at, at that as well. You know, it's a package of policies, right? And that there are quite a number of rail-related policies in the current comp plan that would still be in effect.
Well, nevertheless, people are going to see this as a statement about the county's policies, and it, as it stands right now, it gives, as far as I'm concerned, it gives very short shift to the benefits of rail.
Anything else?
Yes. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this in a neutral way. Does the state's planning in its detail, what's the effect of, how do I want to say this, the goings on in Washington, D.C. now?
Yeah, no, that is a fair question. So this planning effort that we're doing is driven by state law. So far, changes at the federal level haven't impacted what the current state law is that's driving this. I can't predict the future on if other federal activity will end up impacting state law, but as of right now, we as county employees have to implement the state law and this legislation right now. So to be determined, we'll continue to monitor if anything changes.
When was this law passed,
2023.
So, all eyes on me. Huh? So CO2 is basically what you base this all on, right?
We convert, other greenhouse gases are considered, but everything gets converted into the equivalent of carbon dioxide for our calculations. So things like methane, are also being considered.
Like water vapor, right? True.
Yeah, greenhouse gases produced by, human created activities. Yeah. So methane, things in our refrigerants, things like that.
So my question is,
yeah,
how do we measure it and how often do we measure it? Because I always say this, if something is worth doing, it's worth measuring. Otherwise, you never really know whether you've accomplished anything. Mm-hmm. So what it measures today would obviously have to, somewhere down the line, 2050, I probably won't be here either. But at the end of the day, you would expect a reduction of the things that you say affect this. Mm-hmm. So that's my question. I mean, how often is it measured? Is it measured once a year, every 6 months, every 6 years? I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. So Harrison has that. We have a greenhouse gas inventory report, which was used to create those numbers that we showed you. It's on our project webpage. So if you like the details, you can look there. But basically, it's an accounting exercise, and it's following, we have to follow one of the kind of nationally approved protocols to do this. So there's all sorts of guidebooks on how do you count, right, the amount of CO2 associated with X. And so some parts of the inventory are very accurate and some are not so accurate. So for like the utility data, we get the data directly from Clark PUD and Northwest Natural, right, that feeds into it. So it's a pretty accurate source of information. You know, but some other things are have to be estimated if we don't have the, you know, the source data for it. So there is some range in accuracy for those estimates. We have a 5-year mandatory reporting requirement in this new legislation. And so while we are waiting for the Department of Commerce to tell us exactly what they want us to report on, we are anticipating that it will include updating the inventory as part of that reporting. So
I was just wondering if, yeah, you know, we don't grab a piece of the atmosphere and take a look at it. I don't know. You know what I mean? But all I could say is if it's worth doing, it's worth measuring. And you never will know if you're successful if it's not measured properly. So, I mean, you're basically asking a lot, you know. I tell you what, if you went up to my wife and said you're going to reduce how many miles you're driving around, she's going to have a lot different to say about it than I do. So,
does this take into account any of the national and international efforts to cut emissions? I mean, gasoline refinement, I mean, you go back several years, you've taken lead out of gasoline. So,
right.
I mean, that's made a major improvement in the burning of fossil fuels and
yeah,
those kinds of things. And the advent of the fuel injection engine, for instance, made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things have made a big difference during our lifetime. And are those things taken into consideration? Because somebody might improve a way to burn fossil fuels that doesn't cause any emissions or it burns its own emissions.
Yeah, so we, as part of what we have to submit to the Department of Commerce, we do need to show, okay, here's the impact we think these policies will have. But part of that is that, and if we did nothing, here's what we think federal and state laws, you know, that we know today. That doesn't mean something else won't come up in the future, right? But we do show, you know, we expect a significant amount of change. And it's a significant amount of change, like just even vehicle standards and things like you're mentioning, Dan. There's a lot that's going to happen that's outside of the county's control or anything that we're going to do. And then there's the impact of these policies that will have some impact. And then there's a gap of we actually don't know how to do that. You know, either the technology doesn't exist today or, you know, we don't have a feasible way to do it at this point. So it is a bit of a puzzle, and the state and federal, you know, and changes will be significant as well.
I have a question for you. On your goals 20 and 21, you mentioned county and EVs. What are you doing about the source of the power? Is it clean power?
Yeah, so the county, we have no role in regulating the utilities. So this is another piece of kind of the puzzle. The county's tasked with helping move this forward, but we only have authority over certain things. So there is, Washington State does have some state laws that do affect the utilities. So Clark PUD has to get to net zero as well. There's a different law that's regulating them. And there's some other things sort of pushing Northwest Natural to reduce the carbon that they are using as well. So that is kind of outside counties, the county authority, but there is a drive from other laws in that direction.
I think I've seen on my, and I live, you know, I have Clark PUD, I live in Le Center. I think I've seen sometime or another, something has come through, say I can buy
clean power. I can buy non-fossil fuel power, mm-hmm. non-gas, non-coal.
Yeah.
Do we have, does the county have any way to make that specification that the amount of power they buy from Clark PUD comes from a clean source?
I think the county's role, so we can make some decisions for county operations, right? For the buildings and things that the county owns and manages. Otherwise, we can do some community education for people to individually make those choices, but the county can't tell the utility what it has to do, right? We can only kind of collaborate together and support. So we are in more of a support role when it comes to the sources of power.
And one other item you didn't mention in there, newer technology is hydrogen. Mm-hmm. You know, I see stuff from Cummins Diesel on hydrogen-powered trucks.
Yeah.
Frito's running natural gas-powered trucks up and down the corridor. They're not necessarily well-liked by the drivers, but they're cleaner than diesel. And I don't believe we have any natural gas filling stations in Clark County.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of technology that's evolving and new, right? So the hydrogen is another example of something we might see more of in the near future.
Well, that's 25 years away, that 2050 date. And that hydrogen probably will be in service then. I believe in LA, they have hydrogen stations. Mm. For, I think it's commercial use. I think Toyota has one too at their plant in Torrance.
I know a trucking that built the plant. Mm. So, and he could only go like 300 miles, but he built it to keep all his local traffic as his own natural mm-hmm. gas.
Mm-hmm. Is it, he's running natural gas?
Running natural gas yeah. in his trucks.
Yeah, hydrogen.
He built his own because he couldn't find any place, so he built his own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hydrogen's clean. So. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah.
Are you required to evaluate the other negative effects that could occur as a result? For example, building wind turbines in the ocean on the East Coast that disturb the whole eco-environment underwater?
Yeah, I mean, big picture, yes. You know, I think part of planning with, you know, at this point, we very high level goals and policies, right? And I will say we have written in some policies that say, county, you need to consider the pros and cons of these actions and be really careful with your implementation. So, but as more specific things, once policies get approved and the county can actually start to implement things, we will need to, you know, do environmental impact statements and things like that on as things get proposed moving forward. So a lot of the details would come later, you know, and a lot of the detailed evaluation. But, you know, there's pros and cons and impacts to everything, right? So that all needs to be considered.
Yeah. Clark County has one large dairy left. How big of a impact did it have on our greenhouse gases?
Yeah, that's, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but for the bucket that looked at agriculture and forestry emissions, tree loss was by far the biggest source of emissions in that bucket. The dairies, while I think they're the more impactful farming activity that we have in the county, it's a fairly small mm-hmm. percentage, given that there isn't a ton of activity anymore in the county. And then I think, you know, fertilizer type soil amendments were an even smaller fraction for farming. So I think if there was a lot more dairy activity now, that would be much larger than it is.
We had a proposal to eliminate that source of greenhouse gases, but the county turned it down.
Uh-huh.
Don't fall for it.
Any other questions?
Nope.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do I have any other testimony from the public over here? Any comments, questions over here?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for preserving the railroad. I think it's of historical importance that the work that you have done be recognized. Second of all, I'd like to thank you for, in part, being responsible for my political activities. I started being active when the Friends of Central Vancouver began fighting the Knife River concrete batch plant. It would have been located right on the boundary to the Curtin Creek watershed. I live on the east side of the watershed, a few blocks away, so I would have been impacted by the Knife River batch plant, concrete batch plant. And that ties in with the environmental things too, because one of the things it would have done is spewn silicate dust for miles around it. Silicon dust goes into your lungs, but it has barbs, and so it doesn't come out, and it is very detrimental to people's health. While I was at county council meetings promoting not going along with the concrete batch plant, I heard your presentation to the council. I think it was a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, where you presented to the council all the benefits that the council and the county would have if the railroad overlay were put in place all along the railroad. During that presentation, I finally understood that if the council were to apply that across, you know, along the whole railway, that at that point they could designate parcels within the overlay as heavy industrial, and the public would have no further input into the matter. And that to me seemed like it was taking away at least one of my rights, not being able to speak against what they could possibly do. Over the years, since PBJR has been activated or run by Eric Temple, we have seen devastation in the Barberton area, which is very close to where I live. We have seen less devastation, but still ecological damage in the Chulachi Prairie area, because all the work he did was without permits. The Friends of Clark County sued him, as you well know. They lost the suit, not the Friends of Clark County, but the PVJR. They have been fined. They have been, there have been conditions imposed upon them to restore the area, and they will be monitored in the Barberton area for at least 10 years by the EPA. In Chulachi Prairie, it will be 7 years. And I was just wondering if your position, which was so positive towards the PVJR and Eric Temple as the operator 2 years ago, if it's still that strong now, because he's damaged Clark County. I know I have a different opinion than you about the Chulachi Mine overlay. I've seen some of the studies done. Up to then, I had only seen maps looking down on the land, but there was a study done by the Friends of Central Vancouver that shows graphically what it would look like. And there's a ridge above where the gravel mines would be, and it showed how much would be carved out until the bottom part was flat with the flat part and up. In addition, that particular section is between two fault lines. Thirdly, the watershed underneath could very easily be damaged. And most of Clark County gets their water from that particular watershed. I really appreciated what I heard from one gentleman who's on screen there, is that I think it would be a great idea if we could use PVJR for transportation of people. It would be a great commuter train. It runs through, you know, from Yakko, Battleground, Brush Prairie, and that would take a lot of traffic off the roads. I realize, or I assume anyway, that the railroad south of Patton Parkway that transports a lot of the industrial products south of that would probably never be decommissioned. But if we could do something, or if you could do something to promote the idea of public transportation with the railroad, especially if the mines in Chulachi Prairie are not approved anymore, that would make a lot more sense to me. So thank you for your time, and thank you for energizing me 2 years ago into being active.
Let me, if I could, just comment on a few of the things that you mentioned there. First of all, the development, if the overlay were on that property, the development would still be subject to final approval by the county of anything, any industrial complex that was built there. So it's not like they could do it willy-nilly without any further discussion whatsoever. Anything is subject to final approval and commentary from the public. So it's not like it's automatic.
No, but so, once the parcel is declared heavy industrial, there is no more public input.
Well, that's true. There are certain restrictions on that. You have to look at the list of things that we carved out that would not be allowed in that area. It says heavy industrial, but it's a very limited amount of heavy industrial. It's mostly light industrial. As I recall, most of it's all, it would be railroad industrial, which is much less than heavy industry. You won't have smokestack type businesses there.
Well, I'm going from my experience with the Knife River Batch Plant, which they rezoned one parcel just south of 119th and right on the edge of the watershed during COVID. They only had to inform one house, and then they made it heavy industrial so that the batch plant could be put in. And, I'm just saying there's two sides.
Well, I'm just saying that there were restrictions on that. Second thing I'd like to comment on, and that is that whether we support the PVJR, we clearly support the PVJR in terms of maintaining and operating a railroad in this thing. We do not in any way, shape, or form condone any illegal use or any violation of rules, regulations, and so forth.
Thank you for that.
So that's let's get that very clear. It's not something that we would give a blanket approval for anybody to do. So that's,
thank you. And I did thank you at the beginning for preserving the railroad at all.
Yeah.
Because it is an asset. Maybe we have different views on how those assets should be used, but
and there are
your work.
There are other misconceptions of what the railroad is and could do for the county, Clark County. There are plenty of benefits for the Clark County. And it could be a very definite revenue source for Clark County. Even this rock overlay, when you talk about the rock being removed, yes, there are way-offs, but what's the alternative if you want to build a house or you want to do anything that requires rock to be build a road, a street, or anything else? You need rock. And if you're going to have to take rock from upstream someplace and bring it down here, it like triples or quadruples the cost of that rock to get it here. So if you've got a local source, you obviously want to mitigate any potential negative impact it would be, but you need to have a rock source locally here to do construction on an economical basis.
I understand your argument, but I disagree with it because of where it's positioned over the watershed, over the aquifer that supplies most of Clark County. And I don't think it's worth risking that for an added cost of gravel. And there are other
So you'd rather pay $1 million for a house than $500,000? I mean, there's a way off, yes, and there's a calculated risk in anything we do when we touch the environment. And studies are made to mitigate those risks in any shape or form. And obviously, it would be evaluated.
I guess we can agree to disagree because I am of the opposite of opinion. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments, questions?
Looks like Jim's got something to say.
Yeah, I just like to respond to the argument about water. I'm an ex-PUD commissioner. Most of the county's water comes from sources close to the Columbia, the Troutdale Formation, which is far below anything associated with North Clark County. So the nothing you do out there on Salache Prairie would have any impact on PUD water supplies. There, the water's coming from the Troutdale Formation, which is very deep and comes up close to the Columbia. And one of the things that the PUD is doing that's a big benefit, I think, is they're pumping water from the lowlands up into the highlands, which is reducing the need to extract water from the local streams. So the idea that that pit would have any impact on county water, I think, is wrong, incorrect.
No, you can abstain talking, Mr.
Any other comments?
Moved
and seconded. Did we adjourn? We're adjourned.
We're done.
Wait and talk to Mr. Green.